question is, what is a coalition? Because you call this workshop is coalition building, and oftentimes we talk about coalitions, but I don't always know for myself if I know exactly what I'm talking about, or if the people I'm talking to have the same idea of what a coalition is that I do. And that's kind of important to know, are we talking the same language? Yes, sir.
Well, I say coalition is people who may have different identities, but have some common interests that they can work towards. They have some common objective they can work towards.
Yes, very, very good. So they have different entities, different identities, so different groups. Yes. They also may have different opinions about things or different agendas. They're working towards some common goal. The other thing I would add to that is they also are sharing resources. Whether that's intellectual property, or whether that's bodies throughout the canvas, and whether that's, there was in Washington, D.C., there's about 20 groups that do cleanups in the spring. You know, you have your Christmas in April, so you have your Sukkot in April, and you have your, we had the hunger cleanup, and we had Hands on D.C. And so finally, because we were all asking the same hardware stores for the same tools all the time, we created a community tool chest. So we got a little bit of money from Home Depot and created a community tool chest where everybody shared tools. So sometimes it's stuff that you're sharing, and that's the only reason you're sharing it, is for those particular events. But it makes more sense to share them because collectively it's stronger than what you could do individually. So I think that's the other thing for me about coalition, is coalitions are formed sometimes temporarily, sometimes for the long haul, mostly though, or it could just be on paper, but we're forming it because collectively we're more impactful and stronger and bring more to the table than if we were to attempt to achieve our goal as an individual entity. Does that make sense?
You have to have something in common, right?
What's that?
You have to have something in common, right?
Yeah, you're working towards some shared goal, some shared idea.
Republicans and Democrat parties, right? That wouldn't really be a coalition.
No, because you're not working toward the same goal. For sure, you want to work toward the same goal. And again, it could be short-term, long-term. You know, with Pennsylvania, the Gettysburg DFA chapter, I'm assuming this is an organization that's going to be around for some time. It's not just to get George Bush out of office, but it's literally to ensure that the grassroots has a say in how politics goes. So you may begin, you know, how this came about was Howard Dean running for office. It's the way we began. Because for the first time in a long time, there were people who were energized and encouraged to take some action. And then there was an organization that said, oh, here's how you can take that action. Look, we're going to have a meetup, and we're going to do these three things. How often have you cared about something and wanted to do something and had no idea how to go about doing it? Kind of like Hurricane Katrina. Do you know? I know for me, I made my donation. And I went onto the Red Cross website, filled out my form, and they said it could be weeks before we get back to you. I mean, okay, well, I really still don't feel like I'm contributing anything, and I'm seeing the news day after day and wanting to do something until I found out friends of mine have a hotel in Dallas that opened up their hotel to the evacuees, who they're referring to as their guests of the hotel, and they're helping them find permanent jobs and housing. And I emailed my friend Anne and said, what can I do? And she wrote back, she goes, well, I don't know right now, but I'll get in touch with you. And literally later on that afternoon, she called and said, you know, what we need is to find some money to repay us for these hotel rooms. Because we're not renting them to anybody else. Our money, our business is going to lose out, and our hotel could shut down. We want to keep providing the rooms, so can you look for resources? So that's what I began doing. And finally, I was like, oh, I have a place where I feel like I'm impacting something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the critical piece about DFA, is you have specific ideas and actions that a person can take, not just to impact the presidential election, but to impact local elections, local issues, whatever it is, and the like-mindedness of it, one could say, is to get involved and impact local politics. Initially, it may be get Bush out of office. Initially, it may be let's get Santorum, let's dump Rick, right? Whatever that is, but over the long haul, you're giving people specific avenues for action to turn their energy into action with DFA. Well, let me ask you this. What would be some of the pros about forming a coalition? Why bother? I've talked about it's stronger than the individual. Some of it's, right, the collective is stronger than the individual. Why else would I want to form a coalition? What would be the point? Because I think sometimes we jump into wanting to form a coalition, we haven't thought through how come.
Well, don't you?
Different groups have different strengths. You may not be as savvy as another group, and they already know how to do everything.
So you would bring them to the table because they've got media savvy that you maybe don't have, so they can give some more visibility to your issue or idea? Okay, great. And somebody else start talking?
No, I was just going to say that, more people, somebody at their morning session said if you have a crowd, it attracts a crowd. So the more people you have, you form a gestalt. Here I am talking California.
That's okay.
You form a gestalt.
I'm in Colorado. I understand.
Okay, so you understand everybody west of this. Right. So you have this gestalt of energy, so it's much more powerful, you know, than just having the one. Collective soul.
Okay. Strength in numbers, yeah.
I mean, a compliment to that, you always want to look bigger than you are because it makes you seem powerful.
Yes.
So perception is a lot.
Okay.
This is this thing that has a power of its own because it's so big. So part of everything you do is to make yourself look bigger.
So part of it is just sheer numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's part of sheer numbers, it's also perception. It's almost sort of like you project yourself and you want people to see projection is bigger than you are, which is kind of everything you're doing all the time is to look bigger all the time. So you look like a groundswell.
Yeah, okay,
and inevitable
good.
And that kind of thing.
Inevitable.
Is this something that...
No.
That's a previous abstract
art.
That's something to do with science because we're in the sciences building. So perception, I'm going to put sheer numbers. For crowd building, resources you don't have, why else would you have, why else would you form a coalition?
Fundraising.
What's that?
Fundraising.
So they have, that would be another one under resources you don't have, right? So that would be, they might have access to money that you don't have. Or you could be going after dollars that you will only get if certain people are at the table with you. Because you could go a couple different ways in here.
This may seem very intuitive, but more subjective. But one thing, when you start having a coalition of different groups coming together on something, particularly from a progressive point of view, the implication of that is that you are finding a common ground. And the fact that there are diverse groups coming together to do a thing, I think provokes a lot of curiosity and suggests that there's this common ground place that's being discovered that people may be drawn to. I don't know if that's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
How would you put it succinctly so we're out of
the board? Man, succinct is tough.
Well, I was wondering if it was going back to...
I don't mean just numbers. I mean a synergy of a common ground. You're defining a new common ground between diverse groups. Is that better? That's shorter.
Unification of purpose, almost.
It's not just unification of purpose in that people are somehow disciplining themselves to act alike. It's that two different groups have discovered an intersection.
The ways that they converge, which
that
could then attract other people because you're now defining a new common ground. I mean, in a sense, you could say that's what DFA did.
Uh-huh.
Because if you think about it, how many of you in the room, I mean, I've been a political activist since high school. I've never not been one. I'm a community organizer by training. How many others are in the same boat as me? You've been involved in politics for a really long time. And how many of you, you've been involved, this might have been your first election cycle in this last presidential go-around. This is what really got you mobilized. Yeah, for a lot of people in DFA, that is the new common ground. It's like, okay, there's a way for me to get involved in this.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me attempt an example of that. Recently brought my attention. A lot of people feel for different reasons that we should reduce our consumption of oil. And it turns out one group of people who feel strongly about that are the environmentalists who are worried about global warming and things of that nature. But it turns out that those folks I just mentioned are generally considered to be on the left. It turns out there's another group which basically is concerned with the geopolitical aspects of it. They don't like the fact that this country is now dependent on a vital resource someplace else. And they want to reduce the consumption of the oil for reasons of politics. And these folks are generally pretty conservative. So they can come together and work together on a common issue, but with time, there could be some cross-bleeding here of ideas. I'm trying to understand the other person's point of view.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very good, because in a minute I want to talk about the cons of why not to form a coalition, but I think one of the major pitfalls that people have when you go to form a coalition is you go into it, I now think Don should form my coalition, and I haven't gone into it to hear what Don thinks he would get out of joining the coalition. It's as if, you know, in most martial arts, you're combating with one another, and then does anybody, was it Aikido, where you're using, as the person comes toward you, you're using their energy and facing the same way. So what you're doing when you're forming a coalition is you're bringing that energy alongside you to face the same way. And often we don't think about that. We think, okay, well, we look around the room, most of the faces are white, but we need more black people. So let's go after more black people, more Latinos, that's what we need. They're all young people, we need old people. They're all old people, we need young people. Without thinking through, why would I have an interest as a Jew to join this particular group? What's in it for me? So I think it's really important when you begin to meet with people that you go into it, not with the answer of why they want to join, but engaging with them of how come you think they should join, and then also coming out Bert, right? Engage Bert and, well, Bert, what are your goals with the Ministerial Alliance, let's say, or the tennis group? What are your goals over the next year? What is it you want to accomplish? And let's see if by you being involved with my coalition, you can accomplish your goals. I was using this example in the last group. I was the National Campaign Director for Americans for National Parks, which was a nationwide first ever organizing effort of the National Parks Conservation Association to get more money in the Park Service budget to protect the national parks. And we did a lot of work in Pennsylvania with Gettysburg, et cetera. And one of the members of our steering committee, most of our steering committee, and these are the people I wouldn't make a move without. And in a minute, I'm going to tell you how to rate groups to see how they should, how you want to be thinking about them. But these members of my steering committee, I wasn't going to do anything without their input, their advice, their guidance. We needed what we called an unholy alliance. We needed an unlikely suspect to join the steering committee. And I met this woman who was head of the outreach for Girl Scouts in New York City, and I sat down starting to make coffee with her to find out what her interest was. You know, having been a Girl Scout, by the time I got to high school, it was not cool to be a Girl Scout. But, you know, how many Eagle Scouts are there really out there, right? How many older Girl Scouts are there? And so one of her concerns were, how do I keep young women between the ages of 16 and 18 involved in the Scout troops? I said, what if we created a Park Service badge? What if we did something where we train those older girls to be volunteers at the parks to take groups through and be educators, be park educators, and part of them getting the badge will be to bring a younger troop of girls through. So they're passing them what they learned to the other group of girls, and we came up with this whole thing. There's now a badge for the Girl Scouts, and that brought the Girl Scouts to the table as part of the steering committee. We weren't going to make a move without them. Because at the time we launched this campaign, I wrote the campaign plan on like June 11, 2001, and launched the campaign about September 12th. Oh. 2001, and there was a period of time in between there where I had to choose, okay, the country's about to go to war, is there going to be money for the national parks? Are we going to put this on the shelf, or are we going to move ahead? We chose to move ahead and have the largest increase in Park Service history. Part of it was because of the unholy alliance we had, not just with the Girl Scouts, but I had Jesse Helms on the floor of the Senate talking about how great the national parks were. Because there's just too much to lose. And when you talk to somebody about the national parks, all of a sudden their eyes would roll up in their heads, and you think about the time you watched the sunset at the Grand Canyon, or you walked along Gettysburg Historical Park at dawn, wondering who walked ahead of you with that. People would get goosebumps on their arms. Jesse Helms was no different. He was no different. For him, it was the Great Smoky Mountains National Parks. National Park and where he grew up, so it was appealing to people's individual interest in mind. Okay? So what are some of the, why wouldn't you want to form a coalition? What would be some of the pitfalls of, you know, the cons of forming a coalition?
Disruptive individuals.
Yeah. Some people who, even though you're working toward a common good, just can't seem to put their personal interests aside for that particular organization, right?
Which could be the bad press.
Bad press. Can I ask you to not have side conversations? Just distracting for me. Thanks. Bad press, yeah. It could be if you have disruptive individuals, that could then lead to bad press. The other piece is you could get bad press by some groups joining your coalition because you don't know what their baggage is. In joining your coalition, they could be a media lightning rod.
Yeah, your own, what your core group may be threatened and feel that this is diluting the mission or the purpose of the group which they belong. You could begin to lose people because you're not dealing with the enemy.
So you don't have buy-in from the sort of traditional members of your group,
right,
which is a problem. Why else would you not want to form a coalition?
Loss of focus.
Yeah, that would be their complaint, that you're losing your focus. This is what do I join the group for?
You might have to compromise.
So you might have to compromise your position. So
your values or your position.
Yeah, so if I'm an environmentalist working on environmental regulations and I have the hunters with me on my particular environmental group, I might somehow lose focus, or the traditional people that are with me might not want hunters because they're also the people that care a lot about animals and don't want people hunting them.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, along with disruptive individuals, is the ego within your own group of that, of saying, we are not going to join the hunters, even though they are just as passionate about saving the forest as environmentalists. Ignore the other issue. You must focus on their goal, and a lot of people get involved in issues and campaigns for themselves.
Yeah.
And when the focus is no longer on them, then they get upset.
Yeah.
Right,
so do you think that the benefits far outweigh the costs?
It depends.
Okay, good. Let's hear what Warren, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I know with this is on the end of political campaigns, there are certain Democratic parties in certain counties that candidates bypass just because they're more disruptive to the campaign than going around them.
I think you just said the same thing. You said there are certain organizations that candidates bypass because it's more disruptive going around
the party, them? No, it's more disruptive working with them than simply going around and ignoring
them. Mm-hmm. And let me just point out something about that there's ways that you can bring people along without actually having them at the table. This is my ranking system for organizations, because I do think the benefits far outweigh the costs for the most part, but the question is, how do you form your coalition and deal with all these pitfalls or avoid them as much as possible? Obviously, you wouldn't want to form a coalition with the intent of having someone be disruptive. So the question is, how do you think through all the potential pitfalls beforehand? So this isn't in your manual, but I wanted to give you something that I use. And I rate the groups that I want to work with. And I have a scale of 1 to 7. At the very, very bottom, there are groups that I know who they are. And that's all I need to know. I just want to know who the other groups are out there that might be doing the same thing as me, that I think potentially could benefit from joining my coalition, that are on the opposite end of the spectrum for me. They're just a set of groups that I know who they are. And anytime you form a coalition with a particular common interest or goal, you want to have done your background homework to know other like-minded individuals who might be vying with you for money, who might be vying for the resources, who might be vying for press, etc.
It isn't true a lot of times in a coalition there's a lead group and others aren't quite as equal in what they provide, the name is attached to it.
I'm gonna
I know the peace rally on the 24th is kind of headed by one group, that there's a lot of coalition groups getting involved to get more people.
I'm gonna touch on that as I'm going through here, but that's dead on. The second group, the second rating, the number 2 rating, is they know who we are. They know who we are. So I know who they are. And those other groups that I know who they are, they might not know who they are, who we are, nor might they care. But I bump them up a level when not only do I know who they are, but they know who I am. So that's at the second level or the second tier.
Did you have that written yet? Can you pass it out so we don't have to write it?
No, because we don't have time to do that through here, so unfortunately, and then I've got to get out of here and go to the next group. But you can come up to me later in the day.
Oh, I thought you had said that you had a handout for us. So that's
no, no, I don't have the handout.
Oh, okay.
No, I said it's not in your manual.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, sorry. The third, I then bump them up to the third tier when they actually return my calls. So the first tier is, I know who they are. Then when they get to know who I am, like I might be at a meeting, they're like, oh yeah, you're from DFA, I know that group. Oh good, they're now bumped up to the second tier. I bump them up to the third tier when they actually return my calls. I bump them up to the next tier when they not only return my calls, but they're happy to return my calls, and they're excited to talk to me. The fifth call is, I've now turned them into what I call my moles. They will call me and tell me what's happening out there. They'll call me and tell me what the scuttlebutt is. They'll call me and tell me if they, I don't know, heard somebody speak at a meeting and so-and-so spoke out of turn, or at their meeting somebody said something that wasn't, yeah, sometimes rumors get started. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Rumors get started about what you're doing, your organization, your character when you're running for office. And if you have people out there who are willing to call you to say, you know what, I just heard such and such, you gotta deal with this, then that's a really, really good thing, because you've got people out there who have your interests in mind. The sixth tier that I bump people up to is they wouldn't make a move without me. The organization who once upon a time, I knew who they were, and I either knew who they were because they were opposing me or because they were in line with what I was doing, but now they're not going to move forward until they talk to me because they see me as an organization that's important for them to work with. And then the very last tier I move people up into is we have a shared partnership. So when you were talking about the peace and justice rally, there are some three main groups that are organizing the rally. There's probably some tier around them that are somewhat affiliated, doing some work to turn crowds out, et cetera. And there may be other people that are hangers-on. It's what I call doing a power map, which I'm actually going to be doing tomorrow in the big session, which can help you figure out who can help you achieve your goal, what resources do they have, and then how do you get to people. And it's a visual way to do that. How do you then go about starting? Is that clear, the seven tiers? Anybody have a question or anybody to repeat? Yeah.
The last one, the top tier.
The top tier that we have a shared partnership. And that this in the shared partnership, I'm glad you asked that because it reminded me of another point that I wanted to make. In the shared partnership, when I am forming a coalition with a series of groups, I have a certain set of guidelines that we have not only sat down and talked about, but we've picked up. So there's some set of guidelines that as a coalition member, I'm asking you to sign on to, which avoids people not knowing what to expect. Like, you know, as a coalition member, you're agreeing to run an article 4 times a year in your newsletter. You're agreeing to come to the meetings once a month. In return, you'll have access to our mailing list. You know, whatever lists we get from events that we're at together, we'll make sure that everybody gets those lists. You know, as a coalition member, what you'll get in return is your name on something, that kind of thing. So you want to spell out what the expectations are. So there's two levels of expectations. One is, what's the expectation for anybody that wants to join? Because there may be some group that calls me and says, you know, I really want to join your coalition. I heard about you guys are doing good work, and I want to be able to spell out for them what the expectations are for a coalition member. Then there's particular items of interest that Bert and I or Oren and I for our particular groups may have, because what Oren's out to do is he wants to get more of his inactive members active. And one way that he sees to do that is by joining the Coalition for Americans for National Parks, because they'll then feel like they're part of something bigger. So it's one of the things he wants to do. So then Oren and I, in our initial conversation, will sit down and go, okay, if what your goal is to activate more of your membership, how are we going to do that? What are the opportunities? Okay, well, over the course of the year, one of the things we're going to do is a regional conference. Do you want to host it so that you can turn out more people who maybe aren't part? What's your first name again? The Red Sox.
Mason,
you said you weren't part of a DFA, but we're going to join one. Is that right?
Well, I mean, we did dean meetups and everything.
Right.
Where I'm from, I'm not officially joined or anything like that.
Right, but then you turning out to something like this might get your interest and then start a meetup. So one of the things that in forming a coalition with me, DFA may want is to get more people excited about starting chapters in their hometown. And I want to make sure as the person who's head of the coalition that you're getting what you came for. Otherwise, you're going to have some disgruntled people. That's how you keep disruptive individuals from being disruptive. Now, there's a couple things about that. One is you remove them from your meetings, and you literally talk to the person who's head of that organization to say, you know, we're trying to work for something, for a common good together, and your comments or whatever aren't adding to us working together, so you gotta get this guy, get Don out of there. He's too disruptive, that Don, because you look so disruptive.
I know.
I was thinking you were an agitator when I saw you. And then I think we'll also, you know, when you're talking about no buy-in from your membership, if collectively you're brainstorming what groups you think ought to join, then you're going to get buy-in from your membership. And what you want to be able to do when you're initially forming a coalition is come up with your other, you know, two or three organizations that are going to have the shared partnership, that you're clear, you're working toward the same thing, you're working toward the same goal. And then the people in your membership are the ones who are the most vocal about not getting a say in the matter. I'm now going to give, what's your first name again? Virginia, she's one of my agitators. She's somebody who's never pleased with anything. She's always got something to say. So I'm now going to say, Virginia, one of the groups they want is the local PTA, and your daughter has kids in the local school. Can you talk to your daughter and bring her to the table with the local PTA chapter? Now she's got a vested interest in making sure the coalition goes well. So you also want to figure out for those people that are usually disruptive or might feel like you're breaking from tradition by forming the coalition, how can you, hardly said, toss them a bone, so to speak, to get them to work with you at the table. And then for sure you want to be doing your background check on the groups that you want to have joined to see how much bad press they have, that's going to be, how much baggage. Right? You would do the same thing if you were about to get involved with somebody in a relationship. You want to know how much baggage they have before you agree to be in a relationship with them, wouldn't you? It's the same thing in forming a coalition. You either agree to accept the baggage or you don't. What other questions do you have? About anything? Yeah.
Well, this actually is really interesting because it applies in many ways to the coalition that is PA for Democracy. We're really all just individual groups that are together, and I guess I just would like to know how things can go on permanently. I mean, always wanting to have these separate geographic groups and yet wanting to always be together when we're not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, what do you think, first of all? Any ideas?
Well, I mean, you could create a legal structure, but then that's your group. It's not a coalition anymore.
Okay. Anybody else have any ideas?
Well, that's what you do is you take a coalition and make it.
But that takes it makes it central rather than what we have, which is spokes, which works for us.
I mean, does it really? Because you could have what we have with the Democratic Committee, which is a central group that has a structure, but you're all county parties. You're pretty much left up to the county party or the region to do your own thing. Yet we do have one or two, we have like four meetings a year, and they do stuff as a broad overall group, but it really comes down to the county level and what they do and the direction they the party's going to head ultimately at the county level, not with the center or central group.
Yeah, but the county doesn't have a lot of autonomy from what comes down from the state.
The Democratic Party,
going with what Don's talking about there. You know, he's saying that we all had these individual county parties, but the individual county really doesn't have very much autonomy from what comes down from the state party.
In Pennsylvania.
In Colorado,
we do.
When they come in and they stick in a commissar into the party, that's what essentially what happens.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things you could do, I don't know if you have like a set of guiding principles for DFA that everybody, every chapter signs on to. Sort of like the Founding Fathers, the Declaration of Independence. I mean, that wasn't a document until it was a document, until the United States formed and declared its independence. Up until that point, it was a set of principles, you could say, that people agree with. Now, how they went about making sure that the United States had separated from England was very different. Some people hid behind rocks and shot at people. Some people tipped tea overboard. But there was a set of guiding principles that everybody signed on to. So as a member or chapter, which gives you some kind of a context or background that you're coming from. You know, and it may also be that one of the agreements or goals you have, and I'm not saying you should do this as Pennsylvania DFA, is having a once-year meeting where somebody from your chapter is represented so that you can be represented at, because that's what the grassroots is, from the ground up.
Did you mention this at every training you're giving just so that our members hear?
Well, I don't work for DFA. I'm a consultant.
I'm
not going to say that this is the end all.
No, keep with your following ones.
What's that?
Your following.
Oh, yeah, classes. For today, you mean? Sure. I'll be happy to mention that. I mean, does DFA have a set of guiding principles or something like that? That people are a mission statement?
Nope.
Especially progressive and responsible.
Our Gettysburg DFA is definitely formed
They're working on it tonight. Oh, great.
That's why I want you to mention it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it would be great to have, because you want to know that if we're all going to the moon, we're going to the moon. That's what our job is to go to the moon. And eventually to Mars, which would be our vision, is to land on every planet, but our mission right now is to go to the moon. So that's what we're attempting to do, right?
the big issue is that it's really about the power that corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And if you create an organization, somebody's got to be elected head of the, you know, you might have a state president or something like that, and you might have contentious battles for that position at some point or another, and, you know, you might end up having people leaving the organization because they thought the direction of the organization is now going in a completely separate direction from what you thought the DFA should be going into. And, you know, there are county chapters that are going against what the state party believes. And there
you're
are,
talking about Democratic county chapters?
Well, no, I'm talking about where the DFA could go because it's getting more official and because it's structuralizing, if that's a word. But it's...
That would be the cynical view of where.
No, it's where I could go. Yes, no,
it's the cynical view of where.
The more people you get, the more organized you get, the more power over people you get.
Only if you're top down.
Yeah, Green Party.
There are national power struggles in the Green Convention.
Sure.
If Green got big enough,
there are nasty struggles at Green Convention.
Oh, okay. I'm just putting a little time out of this conversation. And I totally understand where you're going to, and I think it all comes down to making sure that there's those checks and balances of having a steering committee, having everybody have a say at the table. You could have nasty battles like that for dog catcher, and who's going to be the best dog catcher in the neighborhood if you let it get there. I just want to watch ourselves having a, like, that's a viewpoint, not the viewpoint or the only viewpoint. That's one way you could look at it. There's nothing wrong with that view that it could happen. I just want to point out it's a view. It's one view.
I'm just saying that when you get on a losing, if you happen to back somebody for chair or like, we're all here, and we obviously ended up losing an election, so we're still here. So that's some one thing. Some people packed up their bag and went home and aren't here anymore from 2004. And that, you know, but there are counties that they get involved in an election, they get passionate about it, and either in the primary or the general, if their candidate don't win, they don't want anything to do with politics anymore.
Well, I think that's what you were referring to before about the individual. People are in it for individual versus the greater good. And I think that's why it's important to have a set of values or principles that you're following, because there's some greater good that you're working toward. And sometimes people just have to be talked out of their tree when they get laid up in there. Okay, there's been a bunch of hands. You were first, then you, then yours, then I think to you.
I was just going to say, like, this being the code, however you want to look at it, if you wanted to call it a coalition, all the different EFAs getting together. That's nice, I like that. When you have one PA democracy, that I wish we do have, but if it becomes too overpowering of the individual groups, like you probably heard in the last meeting, everyone kept saying, well, where I'm from in Pittsburgh is done this way, where I'm from in Philly, where we're from here, it's different. So if politics are played different in all these different areas. The nice thing about our EFA is we have our own mission statement for really deals with our area and our group, Adams County, that might not fit the mold of the Pittsburgh, you know, mission statement. We all have a lot of the same beliefs and values, but this is kind of a group of how we're going to go out and actually do something. And so I'd hate to have this big group that kind of becomes a top-down, tells us kind of what to do. So that's all I can say.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's suggesting that it's going to become a top-down group.
I don't think anybody suggests that right now.
Right. Yeah, and when I said, well, I don't vote for DFA, I don't want to oppose what I think on you, like this is the thing you should be doing. But I can tell you, in Denver County, I'm not only the chair of my house district, I'm also head of the field plan for the entire county. So I wear two hats. So on one hand, what we're, 10 minutes? Okay. One hand, what we're doing is coming up with the framework of our suggestions of how people ought to go about implementing their field plan. We're suggesting, because we have a really long absentee ballot piece, we have people go to vote centers, we basically three get out the vote strategies. It's not even the 4 days before, it's 30 days before the election. So that's when the absentee ballots are mailed out. So do you guys have that here too? We have 30 days of chasing the absentee ballots. And then you've got mail-in center or vote centers that are 7 days before, and then you've got the days to get people at the door for the people that didn't mail them in and didn't go to the vote center. It's an arduous task. So we're setting down some suggestions of, here's our idea of how you're going to get the most people out to vote, and here's the idea of how you want to identify your block captains. But in my House district, that might not necessarily work. So I'm suggesting this as the basis to work from in case you don't have the experience I have to figure it out, and then you should tweak it forever, however you want. Sometimes a plus is having an organization who's thinking about long-term, how do we build up Pennsylvania for Democracy overall? Here are some ideas we have. Here are some things that have worked in different areas so we can exchange ideas, and then you tweak it for your local area.
That's worth what I was going to say, is that, you know, you have a guiding set of principles that everyone agrees with, but the problem is with the energy is that this county's strong, this one's not, so the weaker county being really large meeting might help them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the energy they're using there, they can bring back and really multiply as opposed to a stronger county. They're saying, well, we don't have the time. You know, we need our energy locally. And just because I'm in the party, Adams County is a strong green county. We don't like to waste our time on state issues because the state doesn't tell it out. You know, the Green Party. So it's a matter of, each little county has, we have our 10 principles.
Yeah.
You prioritize them however you want.
Right.
Individuals can do the same thing.
Right.
But those are set in stone. You don't just say, we don't need them one. But when it comes down to the structure, it's, you stay with what structure works for you.
Yeah.
And if you want to waste your energy on the state, then no.
Right.
It's not going to help. It's not going to help the goal.
You know your own backyard better than anybody else. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, similar comment, just similar along the lines of like bringing Tanya Payne, she might be a nice woman, but what she said really isn't relevant to here. So if you have a top-down, they're going to be going along, flitting along with things that might be relevant in Philadelphia, might be relevant in Pittsburgh, but aren't very relevant here.
According to who?
I mean, just in general.
Well, no, just talking.
What?
Who's talking? So it's according to you. That's the one thing about coalitions is you want to speak for yourself. Because she came, you didn't find what she had to say relevant, but other people in the audience might have. So you can't speak on behalf of everybody who was
there. I mean, that was just a general, that when you, this is the problem we have with, and I'm saying this for myself, or at least I have with the party itself, is that it does this in Pennsylvania. It thinks what happens in Philadelphia is relevant, what happens in Pittsburgh is relevant, what happens in the big area is relevant, but then they try to come in and tell us to do it the same way as they're doing it in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia.
Was anybody saying that you should do it the same way that Tanya did it in Pittsburgh?
No, but that's what might end up happening.
Okay, but let me just back up for a second, because there's a difference between what actually the facts and your story about what's happening and your interpretation, which is another key element of forming a very successful coalition, is making sure we stick with the facts and avoid the interpretation. She's coming in as one individual who was upset about an election and used her own chutzpah to get herself elected, period. There's no hidden agenda. There's no you should do it this way. It's an example of a very, put your hands down, please. It's an example of, you know, a very inspiring story. I think it was meant as nothing other than that. So you just want to watch how, and there's nothing wrong with your interpretation or your view because you're not some guy in a diner. You were in there listening to her speak. If some guy was eating french fries in a diner and then came in to comment on it, that'd be one thing entirely. But that is your viewpoint. Again, you just want to remember that's your view.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's telling you this is not how it's got to be done. No, she was one inspiring individual. But hey, one individual made this kind of a difference. Can you see that from that point of view?
I wasn't making it. I was making it as relevant here. That's the question.
But it is the inspiration is as one human being to another. The tactics might not be relevant, but it is relevant in terms of an individual, which is exactly how Howard Dean was some medical doctor who nobody knew of, right?
I was looking at the tactics.
I got you. So there's another, so that's one viewpoint. And the other viewpoint is the human interest story and what she did. Get that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I think you had your hand up next.
Yeah, I see that the title of this little gatherings, coalition, colon, reaching out and working with other groups. I'd like to sort of tweak that just a little bit. I think we're talking more about collaboration than coalition. Coalition suggests that somehow or other we get this group and this group and this group and somehow or other organize them into a single group. We've got an issue going on. We've got several issues going on in Gettysburg, for example. There's a bunch of us who are resisting the intrusion of the predatory casinos here. But many of the DFA people are part of that movement, and some of those people are part of the DFA movement, and then we have the Democratic Party here. So I don't see any coalition in terms of a central, single organization in which we're trying to reconcile all these disparate viewpoints. but rather we are collaborating with each other when appropriate and where appropriate and how appropriate.
Well, there's two definitions. The coalition is what you form. It's actually what you form. And the definition of a coalition is a broad-based combined network of separate entities that support each other and share resources to work toward a common goal. That's a coalition. That's the entity you form, and the collaboration is the essence of the working. So, in fact, we're talking about sort of the context and the content that fits inside of it. So, collaboration is the process. This is from, and this is so old, this is probably like 12 years ago, from the dictionary, the process by which several organizations, and don't try to write this down, just listen to it. You can go home and look it up. There's no reason to write it down. The process by which several organizations make a formal, sustained commitment to work together to accomplish a common goal. And that requires joint planning, a commitment to joint planning, shared decision-making, and the pooling of available resources to meet the mutually identified needs.
But not necessarily a single organization in which all of these parts come and lose their identity.
But nobody's talking about a coalition with anybody losing their identity. A coalition is a group of separate entities coming together to work toward a common goal. That's what a coalition is. In a coalition, that is important that people don't lose their separate identities. Now, for the good of the coalition, if you're speaking on behalf of Pennsylvania for Democracy, you'd be Pennsylvania for Democracy, and that's who you're speaking on behalf of. But if I'm now Gettysburg, what somebody say Gaff?
Gettysburg Area Democracy.
Then I'm speaking from my viewpoint as that particular entity. But there's times when I've got to put aside my individual agenda for the agenda of the whole.
Do you always come up with a new name for this group, this coalition that's all these different groups together? Does it have a...
It all depends on what you need, what you need to achieve your goal. With Americans for National Parks, we needed to have a separate name and identity because National Parks Conservation Association was already associated with a certain political party and a certain set of ideals and ideology. And we couldn't have Jesse Helms at the table with NPCA, with Americans for National Parks, we could.
A couple things. First, and I think Tanya did say something that generalizes and probably applies to DFA in a very broad way, and that is that she achieved success by developing street cred. She worked from the bottom up, and the people down in the trenches, so to speak, knew her and understood that she was part of the process and respected her.
Just like you and me.
Yeah. And that is sort of universally applicable in the sense that that's what DFA seems to be emphasizing.
I think it's incredibly important. I mean, in Colorado, one of the things we're facing, because I'm part of a group of women who have formed a PAC to fund local women candidates, we don't have a lot of big bench for women. We don't have a deep bench to get women elected at the local state. I mean, we have a number of statewide offices available right now. We don't have a single good candidate for governor. One last comment from the gentleman in the back.
One thing was that going through the State House party training, I just wanted to back him up that they do train you for Philadelphia and Pittsburgh-based focused strategies for rural-based areas. And
that's the state party, that's not DFA that we're talking about.
Right, but he at one time he was going after the state party, how they're always going after us and telling us to...
You were?
That was what I was trying to get an example of. If that's what happens with this, then
gotcha.
All the training is about,
But we're not talking about that.
Right,
is this
right.
We're going to take that party back.
And the one coalition that as Young Democrats, we were, was the Young Voter Alliance, and we gave out millions of these on Halloween last year, these CDs, and I just...
To scare the Republicans?
Yeah. In the big cities, where we hand out most of them, and that was a coalition of... National Stonewall Democrats, League of Hip Hop Voters, Young Democrats of America, Move On Student Action, and League of Pissed Off Voters.
That's great. One thing to say to underscore is that your tactics at an organ level, the tactics for any political campaign are the same. Your strategy would be different. So one tactic is you got to talk to voters face to face. Okay, how do you do that in a rural area that's very different than an urban area? But some of that remains the same. We need to wrap up. Is it a final? Somebody have something you're really burning to say? Don, you really... You want to have the last word?
No, actually, I just want to ask you something. What would you say,
at least,
to win
the election last year.
Say that one.
What groups, the spare groups, coalesced to win George Bush, the 2004 election?
And what was his coalition?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good. Okay. You know, is there really, I think, what's that? I think I'm 202 is the next one. I think probably, you know, I couldn't name them because I try not to. There's really so much space in my brain, so I actually try to not have facts like that influence the good Democratic facts that I have in my brain. But one of the things that he did, which actually started with Newt Gingrich in the mid-90s, is, you know, unfortunately, Newt Gingrich had a drumbeat that he beat, and he beat, and he beat until people followed him. And it was the Christian right, the key players, you know, the 72-hour project, which happened in Virginia, where they basically stole a page from our playbook, went door to door, knocked on doors, and turned out the vote. And part of that was because we had had so much success in the 70s, et cetera. They have spent 30 years building up this alliance of thinkers from the Heritage Foundation and the Independence Institute and the Reason Institute, Reason Foundation, et cetera, to getting people elected on the very, very local level. School boards, you know, school boards, city board of region, all the local elections. Each one of you should be running for something at the very, very local level, whatever that elected office is. Don't just look at city council, state house, state senate. Look at everything at the local level, whatever your local politics are, because we need people at that level. That's how the Republicans have gotten themselves in, is they built a bench from the bottom up and kept building it and building it.
And isn't that what we're trying to do?
Yep, that's exactly the point.
Yeah. I'm really, Adam's comment is only 6% of the Green candidates nationally, because we run. That's the goal.
Run.
That's great.
That's your best advertisement, is to get candidates out there.
Great. Perfect.
That's what they did.
That's the best last thing you could have said. Thanks, everybody.